You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Looks like a recession is baked in the cake. Every day you hear more layoffs taking place all over the place, especially in tech. Auto sales look like they're about to hit the skids. Recession is on the way. And we're talking with financial expert Dennis DeBergen. Dennis, great to have you back on the show. So what's your take on the imminent recession, as if we haven't been in one already for the past year?
Well, I think, first of all, Carrie, thanks for having me back. Enjoyed our visit last time and was a pleasure to be back on, so thank you. I happen to be of the opinion that two consecutive quarters of economic contraction does define a recession. There are those in power today that say that's not necessarily a recession. I think that we have been in a recession since probably January of 2021. I think a lot of the GDP growth that we saw in the third and fourth quarter of last year can be attributed to debt accumulation. And I think a lot of what you're seeing now is not only are we in a recession, I think the economy's contracting, but I think this will be exacerbated by the fact that credit is really, really tightening. We've got car dealerships closing because their floor plan financing is being pulled. Car financing is harder to get. And in a consumer-driven economy, that's going to be very, very difficult to overcome quickly, in my view.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. And the question is, what are they going to do about it? What can they do about it, right?
Well, yeah. So if you're Jerome Powell today, you're in a pretty uncomfortable seat. You have one option. You can try to save the economy and provide stimulus, but that feeds this inflation monster we've been fighting for a couple years. The other option is to try to kill inflation by raising interest rates, and that exacerbates a recession. So you've got two choices, and they're both bad choices. So the question is, what will the Fed do? I think we'll probably end up in stagflation, as we discussed before when I was on the program. I think you're going to see prices rise in things that you have to buy, and I think you're going to see prices fall in things that you own.
Right. So are you thinking that the Fed's going to start cutting at some point, the Powell pivot? Is it coming, or are they just going to stay the course and the economy be damned?
I don't think they're going to stay the course. I think that they're going to go back and use the only tool that they probably have left, and that is more easy money. And I think that will be difficult for inflation. We can just go back, Carrie, and look at the recent bank failures. Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank. The Fed came out and openly stated, we're going to make all depositors whole, even on uninsured deposits. They added $400 billion to their balance sheet in 2 weeks to bail out the banks in the midst of what is supposed to be a taper. So I would argue that we're already starting to see the pivot.
So the taper caper is over, huh?
I like that terminology, but yes, I would certainly think that that's the case from my view.
And certainly precious metals are flashing the warning signs, and the dollar, which had a major rally, was over 100 for the first time in 20-something years. And then it hit 105 and even higher. So the confidence out there, and then you got the de-dollarization trend, which I know you've been covering, where a lot of countries are trying to switch. I mean, I think it's I think eventually it's going to happen, but for right now, if you've got a lot of cash, a lot of funds in the treasury, you're not going to trust a Chinese bank. You're certainly not going to trust a European bank. So the place to park the money is still going to be in the dollar.
Yeah, although there was an interesting development last week. I talked about this week on my headline roundup podcast, and that is that the yield on the 1-month T-bill was bid down to just under 3.5%. A 2-month T-bill was still yielding 5.1%. So there was this disparity in yield between a 1 month T-bill and a 2 month T-bill of 1.64%. So I don't know the answer to this question, but the natural question that I like that I think everybody should consider is why is all this money saying, you know what, I'll put my money in the dollar for a month and take a much lower yield than if I put it in there for 2 months? What's going on behind the scenes here? So I don't know the answer to that question, but I think you're certainly seeing significant cracks in the foundation of the dollar being the reserve currency. And the latest stats I read were that the dollar has gone from 73% use in all international transactions at the turn of the century to 47% today. So that's a significant loss. So I think this whole thing could accelerate maybe faster than people think.
Hey, if that happens, we're going to have a global depression, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think that you're going to have to see that. In my main newsletter, I wrote about the fact that there's so many parallels between now and 1929, but arguably today, you've got conditions that are much more severe. Private sector debt today is about 155% of the economy, which is about where it was in 1929. You know, the difference is, of course, we've got $25 trillion in economic output today. We had $105 billion in 1929. But private sector debt's really on par when you adjust the numbers. Government debt in 1929 was 16% of GDP. Today, it's 130%. And in 1929, nobody knew what a derivative was. And, you know, Egon von Greyert says we've got two quadrillion dollars in derivatives. If even a small percentage of that turns into debt, yeah, we're going to see a global depression. That's just, the numbers are unbelievable.
And an international banking collapse, which we're already starting to see the beginnings of, Credit Suisse and Deutsche Bank and a host of others. I think the situation in China could be even more dire than that. They've been printing money. You know, Powell could take some lessons from China as far as money printing goes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that. And I think that, when you go back and study history and look at the panic of 1837 in the U.S., the long depression of 1873, the Great Depression, the canary in the coal mine has always been banking failures. And now we're starting to see that. So in my view, we're following that same pattern of inflation followed by deflation. And I think that this time the inflation's going to potentially be a lot worse simply because there is not a currency in the world that is tied to anything tangible. Every currency in the world is a fiat currency. That was not the case in these prior instances.
Yeah, and this is the first time in history that we've been on a global fiat standard. And it kind of started in the early 70s with Nixon's closing of the gold window. And then 73 was the final nail in the coffin. So we're looking at, we got a 50-year ride off of this phony money. And there were times during that 50 years where things were pretty good. The internet came in, mainly tied to, I guess, technology and globalism. But it worked really well for a large part of that time. But like all good things, it's coming to an end.
Well, and, when the United States and I think Henry Kissinger may have been the mastermind behind this. You may have a different perspective. But, when the dollar gold link was eliminated in 1971, it only took a couple of years. And all of a sudden, the United States has an agreement with Saudi Arabia to sell all their oil in U.S. dollars and put the proceeds in U.S. treasuries. So when that established the petrodollar, it would really, took the dollar and eliminated the link between the dollar and gold, but it established one between the dollar and oil. That is now going by the wayside with the BRICS countries talking about developing their own currency. So I think that's why this could accelerate again faster than people think, because Saudi Arabia has now openly stated, we'll sell oil in any currency that's reasonable to us.
Right. So, yeah, well, interesting times ahead. So how do you prepare? Gold, silver, obviously, their hedges against chaos, loss of faith in the government, and the loss of faith in the financial system. But what else can you do?
Well, my book, Revenue Sourcing, if you don't mind me throwing out a shameless plug, I'd be happy to send anybody a free copy of the book that contains a strategy for what you just discussed. It's revenuesourcingbook.com. Let me know where to mail it, and I'll be glad to get it out to you. But I think we've got one of two options moving ahead to answer your question. I think we're going to see inflation. I happen to believe that, as you stated, Powell will pivot. We will see the Powell pivot that will likely lead to some more inflation. And the way that's likely cured is a deflationary collapse, as you to use the term you just used, a deflationary depression globally. I think that's where we're headed. So I think that all of our viewers should think about, okay, what assets will perform well in an inflationary environment? And that leads you to tangible assets, which I think you have to have gold and silver in your portfolio. I think we're seeing the beginning of what I believe is going to be a big bull run in gold and silver. Not because gold and silver are inherently worth more than 50 years ago, but the dollar is going to continue to be devalued. So that would be my view. Eventually, that's going to give way to a deflationary environment. And the number one performing investment in the 1930s was a highly rated corporate bond. So, you know, very highly rated corporate bond. Keep your powder dry, get a little bit of yield, and, you know, live to fight another day. So I think you've got to have one bucket of assets to perform well in an inflationary environment. You've got to have another bucket of assets that will do well in a deflationary environment. I think we will get both, but the what is a lot easier to predict than the when, and I'm not nearly smart enough to predict the when.
Yeah, me neither, because I thought it was going to happen in the 08-09 financial collapse, and they managed to keep the show going. You know, we're already talking another 14 years, Dennis, that kept this thing going, kept the plates in the air, you know, they're like the performer who's juggling 15 plates in the air, and then he sneezes and they all come crashing down.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Torque Resources is an exploration company establishing a portfolio of premier copper gold early stage projects in Chile. Torque's management and technical teams have a strong track record of raising capital, discovery, and monetization of exploration successes. The company's Margarita Copper Gold project is located within the prolific coastal Cordillera belt in Chile, which hosts some of the world's largest and most profitable copper mines. The Margarita project possesses excellent discovery potential for a major copper discovery due to the strength of the alteration system, large-scale magnetic targets, and the presence of copper oxide mineralization. Drilling is anticipated to begin in Q3 of this year. Torque trades in Canada under TORQ and on the OTC under TRBMF. To learn more, go to TorqueResources.com. That's TorqueResources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, and if someone would have told you, Kerry, 3 years ago, the Fed is going to create $5 trillion out of thin air and the dollar is still going to be largely used in all world transactions, you know, I for one would have said, boy, I don't know if that can happen. But here we are again. And, you know, I don't know how far this rubber band can stretch, to use that analogy, or how long they can keep the plates in the air, to use your analogy. But we do know that we're on a trajectory that is unsustainable.
Yeah. And you know, the trend continues until it stops, right?
Well, I think it was the late economist Herbert Klein who said something very profound. He said, if something cannot go on forever, it will stop. And that's a profound statement, and that's exactly where we're headed.
Yeah, and my friend Nick Santiago likes to say, the trend is your friend except at the end. So real estate doesn't look like it's going to survive the deflationary collapse either, though, in its current form. You know, so many things, Dennis, that you look at in the economy, prices have gone up because of the debt, like auto prices, real estate prices, all these things, college student loans. The only reason they're as expensive as they are is because of cheap money or easy money. And the day of easy money is coming to an end. So once that debt is gone, then the prices actually will go down to what they should be in a cash market, right?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I always say that if you want to fuel a bubble, easy money and easy credit is bubble fuel. And that's exactly what we've seen. So real estate inventories are increasing. The houses that are selling are the houses that are desirable. But, you know, the days of escalation clauses are now over. We're seeing the houses that are selling often with price cuts. You're seeing a lot of houses that are high end, that are overpriced, that are staying on the market. So I think we're starting this move back to normalcy, although we've got a long way to go, in my view.
Remember, once upon a time, a house should sell for 3 times the average income of the area, right? So we're going to go back to that?
You know, I think so. I like to use the gold analogy. In 1971, to go back and visit that, gold was $35 an ounce. The average home in the United States that sold was about $25,000. So if you had 700 ounces of gold, you could buy the home. Or if you had $25,000, you could buy the home. Today, the average price is about $380,000. And if you have the same 700 ounces of gold, you can buy nearly 4 of them. So I think what we're seeing here is dollar devaluation, and tangible assets are going to reflect that. And yeah, when the debt starts to unwind, currency is debt. That means, you know, we're already seeing a big contraction in the M2 money supply. So that's another sign, to use the canary in the coal mine sign again. So I believe we're on the brink here. And I think by the end of the year, things could look a lot different.
All right. So we're on the brink of massive debt foreclosures, debt defaults rather, not foreclosures. I don't believe that the government will allow mass foreclosures again. It's too destabilizing. They'd rather see the lenders take the hit. I feel like during the pandemic, the debt moratoriums, the eviction moratoriums was just setting us up for what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I completely agree. When you have a moratorium on payments, the debt doesn't go away. You're just kicking the can down the road. You're ultimately making the debt problem you have to deal with more severe. And yeah, I think that's where we are. And I agree with you. I think that there will be, lenders will take the hit. The government will try to step in. But, you know, as I noted, the government doesn't have any room left on their credit card either. We are going to have a harsh return to reality here, in my view.
And maybe much needed as well, where
for sure
productivity, where we become an economy, of producers rather than consumers, right?
Yeah. And it would be, we've got this trade deficit again because of energy policy, but, we're not a nation of producers like we once were. So, I mean, if you really want to have a strong economy, you need to build things that other people want. And we don't really have that kind of an economy. And I think this might be an opportunity to go through a painful reset, but I'm an eternal optimist. I think that we can learn from this and have a sound money system and come out, better on the other side. But a lot of it's going to depend on what happens politically.
So Dennis, I think a lot of the issues we're seeing here, widespread mental health issues, people can't come to the terms with the fact that the system is collapsing and keep their equilibrium at the same time. So, drug abuse way up, alcoholism, all these bad things are way up because people can't deal with it. How do you deal with it? I know how I deal with it. How do you deal with it?
Well, I went to the gym this morning. That's how I blow off steam. But I think that we can all deal with this by understanding that this is not the first time historically that we have been through things like this. This might be more severe than anything we've seen in the last, in U.S. history. I think it will be. But we've been through similar times like this as a civilization. And in every one of these circumstances, you have certain segments of the population that do very poorly. But massive change does create massive opportunity. I like to use the example of Ulysses S. Grant, who in the Long Depression of 1873 lost everything. But guys like, Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan got wealthy because they had liquidity and they kept their powder dry. And they became very, very wealthy during that same time frame. So I think educating yourself, studying history, and preparing, you're going to have inflation and deflation. So just make sure you're prepared as best you can for both. If you have debt, do what you can to get that debt under control, because when the deflation kicks in, that debt's going to be a lot harder to pay off.
I couldn't agree with you more. So looking at it, myself, living your best life, getting physically fit, getting rid of that weight, stop eating garbage. The concept of a depression, it's just not just an economic depression. There's a mental component on a mass scale. So by seeing opportunity, by not allowing the situation to bring you down personally, it really can be quite empowering.
Absolutely. I mean, I was interviewing someone and a medical professional who said, look, moving ahead, taking a look at Medicare funding, I mean, that will not fund healthcare moving ahead. You're going to have to at some point take more responsibility for your own health. You're going to have to be your own doctor. You're going to have to learn how to alkalize your body. So, you know, taking control is something everyone should have been doing. But a lot of us as Americans have had it really good for a really long time. And, you know, that breeds apathy. So I think that in a way, if you're educated, if you take control of your own destiny, it is empowering. And, we can get through this better than we went into it.
Yeah, exactly. And just because the country's in a depression doesn't mean you have to be too. And taking some preparations, getting some silver coins, things like that, stocking up on some food, although I've got the emergency food, but I don't know. I'm thinking getting a freezer, getting a few hundred pounds of meat and food in there, things like that, just basic things.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that, we're seeing credit contract a lot, and what a lot of people don't understand is the economy runs on credit. I mean, we could see, if credit contracts far enough, we could see trucking stop. I mean, you could see empty store shelves for a few months if the entire financial system freezes up, which I think is possible. I think taking some of the precautions that you just outlined is will be necessary. I think that's how you're going to get through it and cope with it.
Yep. Couldn't agree with you more. Hey, Dennis, just tell us again your website, where we can find you, your podcast, your radio show.
Well, the best thing to do is just go to revenuesourcingbook.com, request the book, and we will send you all the free resources that I make available. So revenuesourcingbook.com, we'll mail you a box of stuff for free, and if there's something in there that you would find to be useful, that would make me happy. I view it as my job is to kind of help get the message out, just like you. So I appreciate you having me back on.
Hey, likewise. Hey, if you've got a question for Dennis or myself about any of these topics or any others, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. And you can find a link to Dennis's book, revenuesourcingbook.com, over at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. There's a link in the show notes to this interview. And while you're there, sign up for your free newsletter. We cover a lot of topics like this. You need to be prepared. You need to have a plan, even though your plan might wind up like Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until you get hit in the head, but you're better off with a plan than without one. And I think you can get a lot of the wise strategies and a lot of wisdom from Dennis's book. Dennis, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Happy to do it, Carrie, anytime. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.